are Locked On 49ers, your daily San Francisco 49ers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On 49ers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Brian Peacock here with you on this Thursday edition of the show. My guest today is Jeff Geeney. He is the 49ers media correspondent at Pro Football Focus. He's got tons of information, and I love talking ball with Jeff Geeney. So he's going to join me in a little bit. We're going to talk about the new acquisitions for the 49ers and some of the advanced statistics for those players and how they project in the 49ers system going forward. A quick reminder to subscribe, rate, review the show. We're on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play. We are everywhere. Hit me up on Twitter at BDPeacock or email the show LockedOn49ers@gmail.com. Just say hi or get involved in any of the mailbag segments we do here on Locked On 49ers. Some quick little news bits before we get to Jeff Geeney. One was an interesting one. The recommendations for the competition committee for the new catch rule in the NFL. It starts out really well. Number one, control the ball. Okay, yeah. Number two, 2 feet down, or a combination of other body parts that equals 2 feet down in bounds. And, okay, yeah, obviously you need those two things. Number three, take a third step or reach the ball forward, or, and this is where it gets weird, have the ability to perform such an act. So you got to do something else, which is basically, it's that football move, which nobody can really define, which is where we get into all this trouble anyway. And one of the other things is when you look at any catch in slow motion, the ball wiggles slightly and all of a sudden it's not a catch. I don't think they should ever look at a catch in slow motion. So I don't know. Is it better? Maybe control 2 feet. And that's it, man. I think that's kind of all they need. One thing that has always bothered me about the catch rule is the continuation of a catch out of bounds. You know, the surviving the ground part, and then when guys go out of bounds, and then they're looking to see if he rolls around on the ground and the ball comes out. But how can anything that happens out of bounds count toward a catch? Once you're out of bounds, the play's over. If you don't have possession of the ball in bounds, you don't have possession, period. That's it. The tape should stop rolling as soon as any body part touches out of bounds. The play is over if you don't already have possession. The problem is they need to make possession inbounds easier and make catches, because if you catch the ball, you got control of the ball, you got your feet in, done. The play's over. You don't have to keep looking for what happens to the ball out of bounds when you hit the ground. Anyways, I'm not going to go off on, I'm sure there's going to be a ton of catch rants on talk radio on Thursday, so I don't want to get too far into that. One quick 49ers note with the draft. This is from Matt Barrows on Twitter. 49ers have worked out local guy tackle Colton Miller from UCLA. Super athletic. He was the most athletic offensive tackle in workouts at the Combine. And another athletic freak, Florida State pass rusher Josh Sweat, is going to be one of the players that the 49ers work out. He was a top recruit coming out. He was used in sort of an odd role in college at Florida State, but he really fits that profile of what the 49ers might be looking for in that weak side defensive end position, or the Leo spot as it is known. Josh Sweat is an interesting one because his tape doesn't wow you, but he doesn't really play that role. He's used almost inside like a 3-4 defensive end. So there's some projection there, but he worked out like a monster. He had the highest spark score, better than Harold Landry at the Combine. Outlandish numbers at his size, 6'3", 250, something like that. There's a lot of potential there. He's not a first-round player, but he might be the guy that the 49ers are looking at maybe at their pick in the second round if they're not able to find a pass rusher in round one. So a couple of interesting names there. And the fact that they're even looking at top tackles that are going to go in the top 50 of the draft, is an interesting note as well. So when you start getting more of these workouts leaked and we see what kind of players the 49ers are bringing in, obviously they talked to every pass rusher they could at the combine, so I'm not surprised they're going to bring a lot of those guys in for workouts. But if they start bringing in a bunch of offensive tackles, that could be a clue to what the 49ers are looking at on draft day. They might have one eye on the future of the offensive tackle position. One more quick draft note. USC Pro Day was on Wednesday. The Browns and New York Giants ownership were both in Los Angeles to meet with Sam Darnold. So obviously the Browns and Darnold has been a connection, and he might very well be the number one pick in the draft to the Browns. But the Giants, I still think the Giants are drafting a quarterback at two. And then the Jets didn't trade up to three not to draft a quarterback there. And I'm sorry, no, Browns owner Jimmy Haslam was there and met with Darnold and his family, and Darnold did have dinner with the Giants. I don't think Giants ownership was there, though. Man, it's going to go quarterback 1, 2, 3 in this draft. That's going to be interesting, and that only helps the 49ers, really. Question is that fourth quarterback or even fifth quarterback going to go in the top 10? The 49ers are going to have a really good player looking at him at pick 9. Maybe a potential opportunity to trade out if a team's looking to come up for one of those big-time talents at another position or even another quarterback. I kind of stopped scouting quarterbacks once the 49ers traded for Jimmy Garoppolo. I'm still looking at him, and I probably still will, and I'll have some quarterback breakdowns here on the show before the draft and have my opinions about how these guys should go. But I watched a little bit of the workout on NFL Network, and Sam Darnold, it was raining in Southern California, and he threw the ball pretty well in the rain. So it was actually kind of a bonus for him that he was able to throw in those conditions, especially if teams in the NFC North, like the Browns, are looking for him. They traditionally are looking for a big-armed guy that can play in rough conditions like that. So that's kind of a bonus for Sam Darnold that he was able to throw well, first of all, and do it in conditions can only help his stock. And it's looking like it's not a lock at all, but definitely the favorite for number one overall in the 2018 draft to the Cleveland Browns is probably quarterback Sam Darnold from USC. All right, let's move it along. Let's do it. Let's bring on today's guest. My guest today is Jeff Deeney. He is an analyst and 49ers media correspondent for Pro Football Focus. Many-time guest on the show. Always fun to talk to Jeff. He's got the great stats, the great numbers, and really just a good dude. And it's fun to talk football and 49ers football with smart folks, and Jeff is definitely one of those. So, Jeff, appreciate you joining Locked On 49ers once again.
No problem. Thanks for having me back.
Hey, quick question. So as an expecting dad, we're looking at names, and I'm wondering, is Jeff short for Jeffrey? Jefferson? Is it not short for anything?
It is officially short for Jeffrey.
Jeffrey, okay. Do you spell it correctly or like Alshon Jeffrey?
No, it's actually spelled correctly, yeah.
Okay, good. We're looking at a lot of names. My wife likes a lot of short names that would be short for something else, but doesn't want to have the long name, just wants to go with like Max, but not like Max, short for Maximilian, just Max.
Right.
And I don't know how I feel about that.
So when's she due?
Late June.
Okay, congratulations.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you very much. Exciting times. I got to get these podcasts out before I don't have time to do them anymore. I don't know what I'm going to do once that happens. All right. So you know what? Real quick, I want to talk about Jimmy Garoppolo for 1 second before we talk about the free agent signings from the 49ers this offseason. I don't think we have. Have we talked about Garoppolo since he went on that 5-game run? I think I had you on right after they traded for him, but I don't know if we talked about Garoppolo postseason.
No, I don't think we have, actually.
I want to ask about, well, you had a post on Twitter. By the way, follow Jeff on Twitter at PFF underscore Jeff. Fantastic 49ers follow. You said there were some notes here from the PFF free agency update. Garoppolo had the highest percentage of positively graded throws last season and had the highest PFF grade among quarterbacks on third down drop backs. Those are some good numbers there. I love my lead writer at LockedOn49ers.com, Chris Wilson, did a couple of articles talking about points per drive and points and yards per drive that he put up this season and the crazy numbers that he did, and I love that stat. Do you have a favorite statistic that Garoppolo put up in 2017?
Yeah, I mean, actually, it probably was just the two you read off, really. But, he like I said, he was the numbers he put up. Like I said, I think points per drive, and I mean, is another one where I think he's probably off the charts. But he said, the highest percentage of positively graded throws. So quick rundown of our grading system. Basically, each play, a player gets graded anywhere from between 2 and minus 2 in like half-point increments. So if they do what they're expected on a play, they basically just get a neutral, like a 0 grade. And then they do something well, 0.5 plus 1, and the same thing for negative. And most plays, when you do something well, it's a 0.5 or plus 1. I mean, it's extremely rare if you get a 1.5 or a 2. It's something where it's like a game-winning play or something absolutely incredible. But so he basically, anything that was plus 5 and above or 0.5 and above, obviously would be considered a positively graded throw. And he had the highest percentage of that last year. And then his overall grade basically on third down was also tops in the league. I mean, he was and I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, but he and Trent Taylor on third down were just huge. Yeah. I mean, Trent Taylor's number of receptions and conversions on third down, as opposed to the other two downs, were just completely, off the charts as far as numbers. I mean, those are two guys who I think had a connection on third down and converting third downs last year, which was almost like tops in the league.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up Trent Taylor, because as soon as you talk about Garoppolo on third downs, it makes me think of Trent Taylor because he was targeted so much. And I was actually surprised teams maybe they picked up on it, but it seemed like they didn't pick up on Trent Taylor being the guy. It was going to go to him every third down, and either teams couldn't pick up on it or they didn't know what to do about Trent Taylor. And it's awesome to see a guy who's 5'8", 180 pounds, he runs a 4.6, that can be that much of a problem for defenses.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you look at the numbers Trent Taylor put up and Marquise Goodwin put up last year once Garoppolo came in. It's night and day. Actually, I mean, it was the one stat I was trying to think of was 63% of Trent Taylor's catches last year came on third down last year. So, I mean, that gives you an idea of how huge he was, on third down and making conversions.
And it seems like, just judging by free agency, the 49ers like their group of wide receivers. Pierre Garçon coming back, Trent Taylor in the slot, and then you got Marquise Goodwin on the other side. So they tried to upgrade the passing game at running back. That's the first free agent I want to talk about here is Jerick McKinnon, Jet. He's got all the athleticism in the world. Maybe was he underutilized in Minnesota? How do you see the Jerick McKinnon signing? Because to me, it's all about the passing game with him.
Yeah, absolutely. I think if you kind of talk about McKinnon, you kind of have to go back to 2017 with the 49ers. And I mean, I think one thing looking at last year and also even going back to Atlanta with Shanahan is that his running backs have a very big role in the passing game, whether it's as a pass catcher out of the backfield or in pass protection, and you kind of saw with Devontae Freeman, Tevin Coleman a bit. And last year, I mean, you look at Carlos Hyde and Matt Breida, both those guys really struggled in the passing game. I mean, Hyde did have 59 catches, but he only averaged 5.7 yards a catch. He had 9 drop passes, which was the most of any running back in the league last year. And then looking at pass protection, he gave up or surrendered 13 quarterback pressures in pass protection, which was the most of any running back in the league. And his pass blocking grade was the lowest of any running back. So he was a guy who really wasn't giving you a lot in the passing game. He's a good running back, in between the tackles and first and second down. But I think that's where his strength lies. And then, Breida, had 6 drops and I think 27 potential catches last year. So his drop rate was 22%, which was the worst of any running back in the league last year. And I think he was a willing pass protector, but definitely struggled at times. So really had two guys who were not giving you a whole lot in the passing game. And so I think they went out and identified a guy who would be a perfect fit in Shanahan's scheme, and that was Jerick McKinnon. I think, he was a guy, I think with the salary is about $7.5 million a year for 4 years, and I think that's definitely a lot of money, but I would almost, in a way, I would almost discard that. One, I think they still have a lot of cap room this year, obviously. They did front load the contract quite a bit, so if for some reason it didn't work out, they can move on. It's not that much of a future blow to them, but I think that's a guy they just decide they're going to go out and get him no matter what the cost. And, they may have been in a little bit of a bidding war with the Jets, but he's a guy who, last year caught, if you include the playoffs, had 65 catches, only had 3 drops. He averaged 9.1 yards after the catch. He was our 8th graded running back in our grading last year. He was also in the top 8 in receiving as well as in pass protection. So he's going to, help you in both parts of the passing game. And I think he's big enough where, he can run inside when needed. And, obviously he's very good in space. And I think he's going to be really good on those outside zone runs as well. I just think Shanahan and Lynch also think he's a perfect fit in their offense. And I'm really excited to see what they have in store for him next season.
Yeah, it's a good point you made there. And it's something that was brought up by one of my listeners on a show this week is maybe an overpay versus a bad contract. You can pay a little bit too much, but that's okay. It's not a bad contract necessarily. You can absorb it under the cap. If he's the playmaker that obviously they think he's going to be, and just judging by the way Kyle Shanahan uses his running backs, and even if they don't throw it more than they threw it to Carlos Hyde, it should be a massive upgrade in the passing game. And I think they'll even utilize that a lot more because he should be better at getting open. They can move him around a little bit more. I'm interested to see how that works out with sort of OW part two with Kyle Juszczyk, moving him around to the wing and H-back and then splitting out McKinnon. They can do so many different things with the talent they have. And when you add that with their wide receiving core that are very, they're all varied in their talents at the receiver position. And then George Kittle, a tight end, could even split out a little bit. He's got athleticism, but can be an inline blocker as well. It's going to be, he's going to be a mad scientist, basically, Kyle Shanahan is.
Yeah, and that's a great point, because I think Juszczyk is also an example of a contract where maybe they overpaid him, but maybe not a bad contract. But, you know, I think you'll probably see McKinnon also not only in the backfield, probably, like you said, in the slot and maybe out wide as well. And, I mean, it's an interesting matchup, because if you come out there with 21 personnel and McKinnon and Juszczyk out there, you know, normally you're thinking, oh, God, they're going to run it up the gut. You have no idea what the Niners are going to do. I mean, they could have Juszczyk at wide receiver or tight end or McKinnon in the slot. I mean, it opens up a world of possibilities. Like you said, the sky's the limit with you have both those guys out in the field at the same time.
One of my favorite signings by the 49ers was Weston Richburg, and he's somebody I identified as one of the top one or two free agents I thought would fit with the 49ers, upgrade at center. Then they re-signed Daniel Kilgore, and I thought, oh, maybe they're going for guard in the offseason because they had that need as well. But Weston Richburg, I think, is someone maybe even like Jerick McKinnon who can have his best years of his career with the 49ers. I don't know if his scheme necessarily fit his talents in New York because he's such an athletic guy. And I think I saw the statistic that they ran the fewest outside zone runs in New York in the entire NFL, and Kyle Shanahan runs the most outside zone runs. Is that accurate?
I know the Niners run outside zone more than any of their concept. I don't think they're up at the top of the league. I don't think they're number one. I know the Giants on the other, and like the Niners, they got 43% off the top of my head are outside zone runs. The Giants are at 10%, which if it's not the bottom, it's pretty close. And I think you hit the nail right on the head. Is, you know, he's someone who's been really good in pass protection. He was our second-ranked pass-blocking center in 2015. He was third in 2016. Obviously, he didn't play that much last year with the concussion. You know, his run-blocking took a little bit of a hit in 2016. But like you said, I think he's someone who, you know, so he's very athletic, moves well. So I think he's someone who's very much more suited towards, you know, the Niners' zone-blocking scheme they have and not what the Giants have been running. Like you said, they're running more gap stuff and inside stuff and not the outside zone. So I think his run blocking grades and prowess should go up with the Niners. And, you know, he's, like I said, he's been, you know, elite, you know, pass blocking center in 2015, 2016, which is what the Niners need. I mean, they've been, you know, it was one of their big weaknesses was pass protection, you know, in the interior of the line, both at the guard and the center position. So, you know, and another thing you look at with Kyle Shanahan is I think he places, you know, really big importance on having a quality center. You saw that in Atlanta where the offense kind of took off in 16 with Alex Mack's arrival. So I kind of think this is a similar situation here. And so now you have two really good pass-blocking tackles with Staley and Trent Brown and Richburg at center. So that's three-fifths of the line. I think now just, you know, the guards are where a little bit of the question mark is.
And it's a great point about pass protection. I think what was the number four? He's given up four career sacks or something like that in his 4 years.
Yeah.
He missed a lot of last year.
Yeah, he's given up four sacks. Two of them were when he was a left guard his rookie year, but the last 3 seasons he's only allowed 2 sacks at center.
That's crazy. And you look at a team like Andrew Luck, the Colts with Andrew Luck, and his career has been derailed completely because Ryan Grigson, the old GM for the Colts, couldn't build an offensive line to protect Andrew Luck. And sometimes it only takes one play. So Garoppolo's in place. If you think you're okay in the passing game and you have enough weapons to deal with, making sure you don't have a sieve of an offensive line should definitely be a priority for the 49ers. So that makes me wonder what's going on at guard. And by the way, you are listening to the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one local daily sports podcast network. My guest today is Jeff Deeney, analyst and 49ers media correspondent at Pro Football Focus. Okay, moving on to guard here. So you've got Jonathan Cooper, who just signed a 1-year contract with the 49ers, former top 10 draft pick by the Cardinals. He's going to mix in with Joshua Garnett, Laken Tomlinson, you got Eric Magnuson, Zane Beatles. I thought he might get cut, but he's still hanging around. Basically a death match there for two guard spots and probably a rookie as well, I'm guessing. Do you see Cooper as someone who can actually compete to be a starter there, or is this just like an all-out sprint? You line everybody up in training camp and say, go earn the job.
Yeah, I mean, I think he definitely is one of the guys who's got a shot there. I mean, I don't know if there's really any favorites. Like you said, I'm kind of the same camp with you as far as Zane Beatles. I think, especially if they end up drafting a guard somewhere in the first half of the draft, I'd be really surprised if Beatles made it to training camp. But you look at the other four guys, I mean, three of them, you know, Cooper, Tomlinson, and Garnett were all first-round picks. You know, Cooper graded out. He actually ranked 35th out of 77 guards in our grading last year, you know, starting for Dallas. So, I mean, I think, you know, someone who was, you know, kind of middle of the pack, so I think he's got a shot. You know, I actually wouldn't sleep on Lakin Tomlinson too much. He struggled the first 4 or 5 weeks or so when he kind of got jumped in to the system early last year, but really held his own after that. You know, the last 10 weeks of the year, he was in the top half of our weekly guard rankings, 8 of those 10 weeks. So, I mean, I think he's got a legitimate shot at one of those spots. And then, you know, Joshua Garnett obviously was a stud at Stanford, the first-round pick. You know, they're trying to get him to slim down and get a little better shape, so I think maybe he can be a little more agile and fit their zone blocking scheme. So, you know, he's definitely a possibility. You know, Eric Magason looked, you know, decent in the preseason last year. So, you know, they have some depth there, but none of them are guys or stand out or I think locked starters. I think you just have, you know, four guys who, you know, hopefully you hope two of them kind of pan out, really. And then, like you said, I think there's a good chance you'll see, you know, in the first maybe 3 or 4 rounds of the draft, them draft another guard as well. I mean, you know, I don't think he'll last till 9, but if Quinn Nelson somehow slips to 9, I would be all over him.
All right, I want to move on to the defensive side of the ball here, and I completely agree there with Quentin Nelson. He's such a monster, and I think he's plenty athletic to be a guard in Kyle Shanahan's scheme, but I just don't know how if he'll be there, first of all, and how much emphasis they're going to put on that position. And I ideally, you do draft those guys late and develop them at guard. But before I let you go here, I got to get to the defensive side of the ball. First of all, Richard Sherman, how weird did it look to see him decked out in red at his press conference on Tuesday?
It's so funny because I was on Twitter yesterday. Just like her, the wife stood next to me. I just showed her the picture with him decked out in that red suit. I'm just like, that just looks weird. Yeah, exactly. It's crazy. But I mean, I think, you know, here it's funny. You know, I don't get a lot of hate too often on Twitter, but when I mentioned that they should definitely go after him when it was rumored he was going to get let go, it was probably the ugliest of my Twitter mentions I've ever been. But, you know, it's funny. Our PFF team actually graded that as an A-plus signing. I mean, he's a guy, obviously, you know, has been, one of the best corners in the league over the last 5 or 6 years. He's gone 94 straight games without allowing 100 yards or more in coverage. His passer rating allowed over his career is just 47.7, which is, I mean, just a ridiculous number. I mean, he was, if not the best, one of the best corners in the league, you know, from about, what, 2012 to 14. You know, he's not, you know, at that quite elite level anymore, but he's still very, very good. He's allowed a 49% completion rate over the last 3 seasons, which is excellent. So, I mean, I think if he can come back anywhere close to 100% from that Achilles injury, the Niners are still getting a really, really good corner. And I think, you know, you'll probably see him play that left corner position again. And you'll see Akella Witherspoon, who played that left side last year, probably slide over the right side, which I don't think is a big deal because his senior year at Colorado, he kind of played on both sides 50-50. So that shouldn't be a hard move for him.
Yeah, with Sherman, it's really just a question about his Achilles because there's no question about fit. Because instead of, I mean, the 49ers are basically, he's been the prototype and he's the template. It's like instead of going out and finding a Richard Sherman-like receiver or cornerback, they just got Richard Sherman. So they got the guy who is the template at the position, right?
Yeah, I mean, he'll bring some toughness. I think he's going to be a team leader in defense and obviously a mentor to, I mean, they got some young guys in the defensive backfield between, you know, Witherspoon and Tart and Colbert and some of these other guys that I think he's going to be a mentor to a lot of these young guys as well.
So the last signing here that he he's another 1-year contract and it's backup money. So I don't think they expect him to do it. It's almost like the Leo or defensive end, or maybe even you can count the strong side linebacker spot and the Leo spot and just those edge positions. It reminds me of guard for the 49ers because they have some bodies there, but I don't know how confident I am with how good that position is and how good it's going to be going forward. So I got to assume it's a big priority in the draft, especially that defensive end pass rushing position, because they have so many power players that are good players on the defensive line. They need that guy who can consistently get after the quarterback and give you double digit sacks. Jeremiah Itaushu, signed from the Chargers, super athletic player, still kind of developing. He didn't fully develop with the Chargers. I believe it was only 10 career sacks in 4 seasons. How do you see him fitting in? Body-wise, I was thinking maybe strong side linebacker. He reminds me a little bit of Eli Harold in that regard, where he's more athletic. I mean, he's athletic, but doesn't produce in the way that you would expect an athletic edge player to produce as far as sacks go.
Right, and I explained, I'm actually in full agreement with you as far as kind of the comparison to their guard situation. I think they got like three or four kind of guys there, and they're kind of hoping one or two of them will maybe jump out and surprise them. I think between, Tashu and Cassius Marsh, and, you got Eric Armstead in there as well. I know Larry Kruger came to our FC, loves Tashu. I know he's talked about him, numerous times that I've talked to him, but like I said, he flashed some potential back in 2015. He had 46 quarterback pressures that year. After that, he's had a lot of injuries, had a hard time staying healthy. He kind of fell behind, Joey Bosa and Melvin Ingram in the depth charts and some other guys too, where he's kind of, fell out of favor in San Diego. I kind of see that, just like I said, it's kind of a very low risk move. He's got about, I think, $2.5 to $3 million guaranteed, depending on, how many games he's active. So it's a low risk move. And just, I think they're hoping that maybe, he'll, some of that potential that he had a few years ago, comes through and they surprise him a little. But I definitely think that's their biggest need in the draft. And, whether it's, the ninth spot, I don't know, what's going to be there. I think Bradley Chubb's probably gone by then. And, you're looking at more of the Harold Landrys or Davenports of the world. But I think they have a whole bunch of guys right there. And I think they're just hoping one or two of them just, jump out in training camp.
Are there any free agents lingering around on the market that you think, or that have some high PFF grades that you think might be a sneaky impact for the 49ers that they might be able to pick up in the second wave of free agency?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's still a few spots where they need to pick up some guys. I mean, we talked about wide receiver a little bit. I think, I don't see any big names. I mean, I really like Allen Hurns, but I think he's probably someone might be a little bit out of the price range. The wide receivers really got paid in this free agency. I mean, you see guys like, Dante Moncrief getting $10 million a year. And, I originally thought when they extended Marquise Goodwin, I thought they were paying him quite a bit, and that got a little pricey. But that's looking like a bargain all of a sudden with some of these wide receiver contracts have been. But, I mean, I think, I think they're pretty happy with Goodwin and Taylor. And I think, Pierre Garçon, I think people are sleeping on him because he was a guy who was averaging – on pace to get a 1,000-yard receiving year last year with Hoyer and Beathard a quarterback. So, I mean, with full season under Garoppolo, I think the sky's the limit for him. So, but if you want to bring in another guy who might be a third or fourth wide receiver to compete with, Bourne and some of these other guys, I think either in free agency or in the draft, I think that's a need. I mean, they definitely need some more depth at cornerback. I mean, you have Witherspoon, you have Sherman who's coming off an Achilles, and after that, the outside corners really don't have much of anything. So I think seeing, maybe a third outside corner is another need, either late in free agency in the bargain bin or in the draft. And then tight end's another one. Logan Paulson signed with Atlanta just recently. So you have George Kittle, I think they're really high on. He was a guy who, had struggled staying healthy a little bit, played through some injuries last year. But when he was healthy, especially with Garoppolo at cornerback, was really efficient. He was one of the top tight ends in one of our metrics, which is receiving yards per pass route run the last 5 weeks of the year last year. So his numbers really jumped up with Garoppolo. And I mean, you got him, you have Garrett Celek, but that's really about it. I mean, Hikutini's, someone they're going to try and develop, but either, like I said, in the bargain bin of free agency or in the draft, I think that's another position they're going to try and strengthen as well.
Yeah. Looking at red zone, it could be tight end rather than wide receiver too. It doesn't have to be a big bodied wide receiver that they add to kind of help out there, or it could be both. They go a lot of ways, and we've learned that it's a little bit hard to kind of figure out this front office, and Kyle Shanahan, especially, he has some really specific ideas. When he sees a player, he knows how he wants to use him, which is what makes him a great offensive coach and a great play caller. But sometimes not exactly easy to figure out the guys that he's going to love going into the draft.
Yeah, and I mean, and one other guy going back to the edge rushers I forgot to mention was Cassius Marsh as well. They extended him. He was a guy who, didn't struggle quite a bit in New England this year and actually played pretty well with the Niners. The last 4 weeks, he had 17 quarterback pressures and about 120 pass rush snaps, which is a pretty good pressure rate. So that's another guy, I think, like I said, with Armstead and Atachu and some of these other guys, like I said, they're hoping one or two of these guys, jump out and surprise.
That is Jeff Deeney. He's an analyst and 49ers media correspondent for Pro Football Focus. You can follow him on Twitter at @PFF_Jeff. Jeff, always a pleasure. Thanks again for coming on the show, man.
Anytime, Brian.
Okay, that's going to do it. Thanks again to Jeff for joining me here on the show. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Follow me on Twitter at @BDPeacock. Again, you can find Jeff at @PFF_Jeff. He is an automatic follow on Twitter for 49ers fans. And I'll be back next week talking, I don't know what. Hit me up via email or on that Twitter account. The email is lockedon49ers@gmail.com. Head over to lockedon49ers.com for more content and the streams of the show, and you can find out where to subscribe there. And I'll talk to you guys then right here on Locked On 49ers.